We have eyes on the field.
Hey, bada, 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 so we bada.
Eyes at home.
Good moving, you stupid.
Yikes. It's the Field and Stream podcast with Trevor Huth and Tyler Jennings.
And welcome to Field and Stream. Trevor Huth here with the new co-host, Mr. Tyler Jennings. Tyler, happy to have you aboard.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad that I'll be able to replace the one and only Joe Drake.
Oh my God, we're going to miss Joe, but he's off to greener pastures. This show apparently wasn't good enough for him, but it's okay. We're moving on. We're getting better. We got Tyler Jennings, and Tyler is another game warrior. He's out everywhere getting video, all that fun stuff. I'll let him talk about his life, but he's a part of our draft team at Prospects Live, and I started going to him for all of my scouting questions now, and he's telling me why I'm dumb. So it's great to have him here so he can do that publicly. So Tyler, why don't you tell us about yourself as the new co-host of Field and Stream?
Well, you say you're dumb. I'm just as dumb as you. So, I mean,
We can't have that.
Works for me. But, I've lived here in North Carolina my whole life. Basically, I'm 23 years old. I joined Prospects Live through my old site was Diamond Digest. I worked a draft team over there for a little bit. I kind of had some issues with the management up there personally. I left to come join Prospects Live because I did, I think it was the first time we actually did the mock draft stream when Jeff and Matt and Eddie were all doing it. So I remember doing that, and I was in the chat kind of just going over some of the guys I had seen previously. Like, I had seen some guys at Under Armour and a couple other guys in person, like George Kirby, a couple times. And I think Jeff texted me. He told me before, as I was doing that, he was like, I'm hiring this kid on the spot. And the next day, Eddie was in my DMs asking me to join. Should have done it on the spot, personally. I opted to stay at Diamond Digest to finish that drive cycle. Not the greatest idea, personally. I had some issues with the upper management there. That's why I left, mainly was because I just didn't feel welcome there. But I still enjoy some of the guys that are there. I still talk to them. So there's no bad blood. But I joined here. It kind of just kicked off from there. I've worked with Joe, I've worked with Jeff, I've worked with a lot of guys here, you included. And I've enjoyed every single aspect of working with Prospects Live because it's let me show my strengths and it's let me do what I want to do, which is go out and go to all these games and work on my craft and do all this and that and help you guys out with everything. And then, of course, you guys help me out. So it's a great team to be with. And you know, now that I'm hosting this with you, I'm hoping that, you know, I'm not going to call you out publicly as being dumb. You know, I'm not going to do that to my new co-host. There's no reason for me to.
Someone should.
I'm not going to do it.
But you know what? It's great to have you, Tyler, because you've already been out to games and events this year. You were just talking about having to cut a PG National video. You were out at a Vandy game earlier, and Vanderbilt's always stacked with talent. So you've seen plenty of good baseball already. But you know what? Jeff is just bringing both of us on. He's the reason for the stream, I guess.
It is true.
Yeah. My start was a little different. I liked prospects, didn't know a thing, and now I don't know a thing, but I know less, or I know more than I did before. I've learned some stuff, but I was writing for Pitcher List, actually. And Ray Butler, Prospects 365, started a fantasy league, and somehow I got thrown into the Experts League. I put that in quotes just because of my affiliation with Pitcher List, and I met some of the guys, and then Jason Panini got a team job, and Ralph tweets out, hey, anybody wants to help? I was in Jeff's DM saying, hey, man, you know, if I can do anything, I don't know what it is. I actually got brought on just to do audio stuff, and now I'm here. So that was a cool I love Prospects Live. It's a great team. I mean, we just put out our top 100, if you haven't seen it, with all of our evaluators. Just really solid across the board. I only did 7 of the top 100, so you know it's pretty good because we're at least 93% good.
I only had 3 on there, so I mean, that's like, you know, to go on to why I haven't been able to do much with that like the prospect thing that we've been doing, because we're doing individual prospect reports. We had the top 100, we released lists and everything. But I'm sure you've seen a few of them. But my main thing is just like I work a second job. For those that don't know, I'm actually like a guest service manager at a grocery store, so most of my time is there. I also work in another department over there, so I'm like, I got Karen's on one end, I've got to deal with my other coworkers on the other hand. It's a lot of work. And it's like, as soon as I get home, I'm already tired as it is. So most of the time, I've just been working on the draft stuff and trying to get that done. But I mean, I love the top 100 personally. I don't really have many. It's a great team, and we knocked it out of the ballpark. Personally, you're going to enjoy the rest of the list once we finally get those finalized. And hopefully at some point we'll have the full thing out, and hopefully we'll have minor league ball by the time that starts. So.
Oh, well, definitely a minor league ball. I mean, that's coming up very soon, which is awesome. And you are in a place where you should get to get out to see some minor league baseball if you have the time between all of your jobs and, you know, getting out, I'm sure, to some college games. Because you're an NC State fan. You have not been able to see NC State yet.
There might be a reason why. No, I mean, so the full aspect of what I've been trying to do this year was last year was kind of just like I'm getting my feet back into the scouting. So I wanted to go out and do some more local stuff. I used UNC a lot last year, mainly because they were just so easy to get media passes with. This year, what I wanted to do was kind of go above and beyond for non-conference games. So you've already seen the Vanderbilt Oklahoma State opening series. Going to be working on videos on that here soon, by the way. So you're going to have some of those that are going to be coming out here in the next couple of days. Then I was going to do ECU UNC. But I decided to pivot back to Campbell and Maryland because Campbell has two pretty good arms with Thomas Harrington and Cade Cooler. And then Maryland itself, their rotation has been really, really good this year with Nick Dean heading that up. And then of course this past week, I didn't do anything. I was down in Florida for Mr. Ian Smith's wedding. By the way, congratulations to Smitty. He's in Hawaii right now enjoying life. So proud of him. I'm glad he let me come down to his wedding. But this week, I'm finalizing Texas, South Carolina. So we're working on that. Hopefully I can get down there. If not, I'll try and see if I can do like NC State, Notre Dame or something. But that's for we'll just see what happens with that.
And Campbell also has Zach Neto, a pretty good shortstop to their credit, too.
Yes, they do. And he can pitch, too. He can snap off a good curveball or two. He pitched against Sissy State this past week, and the curveball was in pretty good shape, honestly. He fooled a couple of batters on Sissy State late in that game. So, you know, he could be a two-way player. He could be an extra way Otani. Who knows? I mean, he very much could be.
Good. Mason Wynn, although Mason Wynn news came out, he's just going to be hitting, which, I mean, hey, you know, he looked like a really good hitter back when I saw him on a one series sample last year. So who am I to mess with the powers that be?
We'll see how that happens. I think Joe Doyle said the other day he prefers him as an arm. I think I'm the same way, but I like to see how he does it with bat. We'll see how it works out.
Well, you know, what impressed me, and I mean, I can go through all the notes I wrote down, but it's just top of my head. What impressed me is that he was 18, 19 years old, right? He's still really young because he was drafted out of high school in high A Peoria against the Twins high A affiliate. And the Twins, as former co-host Joe Drake liked to tell us a lot, the Twins are slow with their arms. So when you're in high A, you're facing 23-year-old, 24-year-old pitchers, if not even maybe a little older. So it just sticks out to me that he goes up against Sawyer Gibson Long, who's, I think, 23, and he's got this really nice breaking ball. I think it was a slider. And in his first two at-bats, Mason Wynn looked absolutely lost at the plate against that slider. He was not going to touch it with a 10-foot oar, no matter how many times he tried. And he comes back for the next three at-bats in the game, and you could see clear adjustments at the plate. He tried jumping earlier on fastballs rather than being more passive. I think he even wound up getting to a couple of those breaking balls. Like that kind of stuff. I mean, that's what stood out to me. That's what I remember. And he had a good game. I mean, I think he got at least a hit. He stole a base. Like, he was showing off everything he had. I don't know if that was because I was there. I doubt it. But, you know, I can't say it wasn't because I haven't talked to him about it. So anyway, that's not really where we wanted to start this. We're going to jump into talking baseball now with one of your NC State boys, who I've now dubbed Thomas the Tank Legend. You might know him as Tommy Tanks, or maybe even just Thomas White, which is his name. But he hit, I just want to get the number right, 10,000 home runs in the first two weekends of college play, because he's a freshman. His first two weekends at college, he hit a ridiculous amount of home runs. He was like 13 or 14 RBIs each weekend. And then he comes out this past weekend, and we don't have to talk about that necessarily, but I guess he's a bust, Tyler. I guess he's a bust.
Let's say we don't need to talk about this week about NC State. Well, actually, no, we will. I mean, you mentioned this is the first two weekends, basically, he's on college campus. I can tell you for a fact, I was excited about NC State's recruiting class because they actually did a pretty good job of getting him, Peyton Green, Jacob Kozer at the campus. And they even did pretty good on the transfer market with Josh Hood, Pololi, and, you know, the James Groover out of Charlotte. But if you told me that he was going to have five home runs in his first opening weekend, I would have called you crazy. He had like nine home runs in the first eight games of his college career. He was hitting like 600. Again, you couldn't tell him, like 3 weeks ago, you told me that he would do that, and I wouldn't believe you. Granted, yes, he came back to Earth this week. He had two hits on the week, one against Campbell, one against Northeastern. He was starting to strike out a little bit. He had four strikeouts on the week, so he's not striking out all that much. But Northeastern, you know, we talk about, you know, teams facing that college test, that early season test. Because granted, the first couple weekends, NC State is playing Evansville, High Point, Longwood, Quinnipiac. This week they played a Campbell team that's playing better than their record, and a Northeastern team that has a really good rotation in Cam Slater, Sebastian Keene. You can also throw in Dennis Collar, who's a freshman there, that's just 96. NC State just looked bad. There's no other way around it. And Tommy White, like I said, only had one hit, 12 at-bats, struck out twice, which isn't terrible. Had a hit by pitch, but didn't walk. So it was a rough weekend all around for that. I'd like to see how he plays in ACC turn and like ACC play, because that starts up this upcoming week. Before I make a final decision on, like, okay, is Tommy White like the next Babe Ruth for us, or is he like going to turn into Aaron Sabato in his freshman year at UNC? You know, how is he going to mold himself into how he progresses through the year? He didn't meet my expectation where he was going to have 20 home runs by ACC play, so I'm kind of bummed about that. But I'd say NC State's got a pretty good future, despite the fact that they went 0-4 last week and they're in a pretty big slump. So we're going to see how that happens this week, and of course how the rest of the ACC plays, and of course, you know, rest of college baseball, because that's really all we have for ourselves right now, other than, you know, high school ball, which is few and far between up here right now.
Yeah, and you know, Tommy White, he was a great story for a little bit, but I think you're ready to pack it in, is what I'm hearing. Just say, you know, he's gone. Like, we'll just, you know, we'll move on. Try somebody else at first. No, Tommy White is a freshman in college. So, if, you know, I don't think that anybody in the world would expect him to be hitting two home runs a game or whatever torrid pace he was on, because that was ridiculous. Fun, but ridiculous.
And they were all at a dead center, too. Most of them were off the batter's eye. He had two grand slams, I remember. He's already at like 30 RBI. It's been 3 weekends in college ball. Like, that is just insane to think about. And you know, I think he's only hit like one opposite field, one was pulled. The rest, like I said, off the batter's eye. You know, no big deal. Like, that's just insane to think about from a guy that's basically been on campus since, you know, beginning of the fall.
I mean, the batter's eye is super close to the plate usually. They hold that, they put that pretty close.
Especially at the Doke. I mean, they haven't renovated that yet. So hopefully when they do that, they move the batter's eye back another like 50 feet just for the sake of Tommy White's going to try and clear it at some point this year. So
they need to give him a challenge is what you're saying.
Yes, they do. It's either that or he's going to try and pull one. He's going to try and hit the apartment complex that's behind the field in left field. I can't remember the name of it.
Both of those things? You can clear the batter's eye and hit the apartment complex. I mean, he's probably going to hit more than just one more home run in his career. So he could probably do a little bit of both.
Oh, 100%. He could probably clear the scoreboard in right field if he really wanted to. I will say this about Tommy White. The first time I saw him in college, because I saw him in high school, thought he was good. I didn't think he would ever make it to state. Then he actually made it to campus. I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool. Saw him for the scrimmage against Duke back in October, November, I think. Actually, yeah, November. And in BP, there is – you always got the big blue wall at the DBAP. You got the bowl there, and then you got – there's a tavern on the top up there, and then you got apartment complex just above that. The top level of the windows on the apartment complex is where he was landing balls. If you want any idea of how far that is, you're probably looking at 450 plus in batting practice. And the weird part was he wasn't hitting any of the windows. He was hitting the little brick layers in between the windows. So he knew where he was putting them. It was insane to watch.
That sounds awesome. When you talk about raw power, I mean, that's what you're thinking, right? Just watching the dude take BP and just absolutely toasting him out to way over the fence.
Yeah, no, and it's like I've seen some long home runs over at the DBAP. Monty Harrison actually put one on top of that tavern in game once, and it was probably one of the longest home runs I've ever seen. I've also seen Adley almost hit the building in right field beyond the seats. And if you haven't seen that video, I'll probably retweet it at some point when we're talking about Adley on like an Orioles top 100 breakdown or something. But those two are some of the longest ones I've seen. Tommy White just blew that out of the park. I mean, like, and that's just BP. I want to see if he actually hit one that far in game at the DBAP if they ever play Duke at some point.
Well, we have a weekly podcast, so we're going to be checking in on Thomas the Tank Legend to see what Tyler thinks about him. We're going to keep checking
he's
back.
He's got his own segment now. That's how you know he's good.
That's our opening segment every single week. What did Tommy Tanks do? Tyler, what about some other college baseball? Who else have you been watching? You mentioned a few of the games you've went to. So who are other standout names that you've seen?
Yeah, so I'll start off with Vanderbilt's Chris McElvin. It was kind of interesting because Vanderbilt, obviously they have Christian Little and Patrick Riley, who are big 2023 arms for the draft. But they were actually piggybacking that first weekend. Chris McElvin was actually tabbed as the Friday starter for Vanderbilt. And, I mean, I couldn't tell you how many – like how far I would go and how I can like comprehend how good that start was. I think he had like 10 strikeouts in 4 innings. He looked really, really sharp against the Oklahoma State team. That's actually really, really good. And they actually won that series. But that Friday night was just complete Vandy domination. And McElvin, like I said, 10 strikeouts. I think he had like 1 or 2 walks to his name. I can't remember. But the velo was actually up. He was like last year, I think it was more like 89, 91. He was like 91, 94 on opening day. And obviously it was 35 degrees. And the grip on the ball wasn't all that well. Pretty good slider. Rolled over a couple changeups. Good curveball. But he's a guy that I like. With how weak this pitching class is, we've mentioned how bad it could get, especially with Landon Sims now out. And maybe even Adam Meyer out of Oregon. He could be someone that puts his name up draft boards here in the next couple weeks, depending on, you know, what the progress is with Christian Little and Patrick Riley being in that rotation for Vanderbilt once the SEC play starts here soon. Bring up another guy, David Thompson from Oklahoma State. He's a little older for the class. He's going to be drafted again, I think, for like the second or third time. I think he's turning 24 this past weekend, actually. But if you're looking for a senior sign, you want to sign in like the middle of day two, he's your guy because all he does is hit. He hit like 600 that first weekend. And he even hit the game-winning double in game 3 that won the series for Oklahoma State. Pretty patient approach. I like what I saw from him. I think personally, I've talked with a couple of guys in draft chat. Think he's a day two guy, but he's more than likely a senior sign. He's going to save you some money. Another guy that I want to kind of touch on too that I've already written about, but I just love him anyways, and I've already said his name, Thomas Harrington. If you want a guy that is going to put his name in the top 50 or maybe even beyond that in this draft class, he is your guy. When I say that he impressed me a lot when I saw him, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, granted, yes, the first inning was kind of rough. Gave up a walk, gave up a sack fly to Matt Tushaw on a 14-pitch at-bat, gave up a run in the process. But Following that, 18 straight retired, no walks. He had like 10 strikeouts in 7 innings. And he was throwing plenty of strikes, and his pitchability was on display. He threw his changeup either, you know, he had confidence in throwing lefty and righty. He got some pretty ugly swings with the righties, righty on righty changeups. Mid-80s pitch. Has a good slider, good curveball to go with it. The pinpoint command, I think he's only had 3 walks on the year. I could be wrong. It's like 2 or 3 because he shoved again against Ohio State last week. So he's a guy that I'm going to absolutely just – he is my Khalil Watson and my Justice Thompson of this year, personally. And we all know how lucky I am with Khalil Watson. So,
for those who don't know, Khalil Watson can only hit home runs when Tyler's in attendance. So, Marlins fans, if you'd like to fund Tyler's, trip around the country to follow Khalil Watson so he only hits home runs, that'd probably be a good move on your part. And, of course, Justice Thompson. We know that Tyler loves Justice Thompson also.
Yes.
Thompson content.
Absolutely. I was the fan club leader of Justice Thompson last year. I wish he went higher than 6th round, but, is what it is. I think he's in a good system where he can shorten up that swing and he can start hitting inside more and tap into that power.
Is he in now?
He's in the Reds.
Reds. Okay. So there you go. Yep. Cincy fans.
Cincy fans and Miami fans, hit up my PayPal, please.
Yeah, there you go. So I've been watching college more and more, too. I've been trying to get into it. I'm not anywhere near what the draft team does. I live in a very cold state right now, so I don't get to go out to games. But I watched a replay of Vandy, Hawaii, just one game, and I was going to watch the full thing, and then I realized there were fun live games that were just starting, so I got 2 innings. But I did get to see Enrique Bradfield Jr. run, which is a thing of beauty. He glides. He doesn't run. He glides around the bases. Like, it's ridiculous. And then my guy, Carter Young, I was like, you know what? I just want to see a Carter Young at bat, see where he's at. He hit a bomb. So clearly he's the best shortstop in the draft. That's where I'm at. But, what are you going to do?
I will say with Bradfield, both times I've seen him, I literally am just sitting here as like, so how fast was that again? Was that 3.6? Because it's the easiest 80 run grade you could probably put on a guy. And it's insane because he stole like 50 something bases last year. Like he's gonna be a single reason why stolen bases are brought back into popularity, I think, personally.
Especially if they make the bases bigger with the new CBA talks like they're saying they're going to.
That's true. I forgot about that. By the way, banning the shift, bad idea, Bimbleby. I don't know why. Like, I don't like that, personally.
Heard it here first. Banning the shift, bad idea. Field and Stream, mark it. We're done with the podcast. See you later. No.
There we go.
other guys I wanted to bring up, just from this last weekend or last couple of weekends, I've caught the UCF stream the past 2 weekends, and it just so happened it was the Connor Stain start both times. And Connor Stain's a Smitty guy, right? Always trust Smitty. Smitty was Yuri Perez before Yuri Perez was Yuri Perez. And Stain in his first start was not great. He didn't have it. Okay, that's fine. And his second start this past weekend against Ole Miss, he was untouchable, lights out. He had 10 strikeouts against the number 2 ranked team in the country. And everything was working. He was up to like 98 with his fastball. Like, it was nuts. Connor Stain, if he can find somewhere between being bad and being that good, you like it, right? You like it right there.
Yeah.
The other guy from UCF who I may have tweeted about him, but I haven't brought him up to any of the draft guys because I don't want you to make fun of me. Jeffrey Pena, who's their center fielder, I believe. Both games I've seen, he's just flat out played. Like, he looks really good, at least by my vision on a stream. We'll see what pans out, but the stats are there. He's hitting well. I like the swing. I mean, it looks like he's doing well. It's very interesting. So that's your job, Tyler, is to eventually see a UCF game and tell me about Jeffrey Pena. I asked Smitty about him, and Smitty said he didn't remember much about Pena specifically, and he was not facing great pitching, so that doesn't help either. But Jeffrey Pena is that guy. So here's a question for you.
Okay,
Tyler. Connor Stain, Ole Miss lineup. There is one hitter that, and I don't know that he struck out all the hitters, but there's one hitter that sticks out that Connor Stain did not strike out. If you had to guess who that was in the Ole Miss lineup, who would you say?
Oh, my God. The sad part is I haven't even looked at the Ole Miss lineup, so I couldn't even tell you other than, like, Dunhurst and Kemp Alderman.
It's a 23.
It's a 23? Oh, so it's Jagon.
Yeah, it absolutely is Jacob Gonzalez. I am convinced that there is nothing that dude can't barrel. I don't care where you throw it. That man's going to get a barrel to it.
Yeah, speaking of which, that 2023 class, if you're looking, like, first off, Dylan Cruz. Literally all I have to yeah. say on that one, personally.
I agree. I concur.
Yes. No. So, yeah, it's him, Jacob Gonzalez. Like we had already mentioned, Christian Little, Patrick Riley. There is, personally, I think it might be a better class than this year, especially if you're looking for college arms, because we've already mentioned it. College arms class this year might be the worst it's been in like 50 years.
It's rough. I mean, has Tidwell even started throwing yet?
As far as I'm aware, he's doing like he started like a throwing routine. I don't think he's going to be back until maybe at least late April, maybe May. And that's even like, that's not even a guarantee. Shorter injuries are not something you mess around with pitching. And it sounds like it might be, you know, might not be as good as some reports say. I mean, there's just a bunch of rumors going around. So I'm not sure what's true and what's not. Personally, I'd like to see Tennessee kind of take it easy with that because they have a bunch of pitching depth as it is. Like, you got Chase Burns as your Friday night starter, who is a true freshman and has done really well so far. You got Chase Dolander, who, by the way, another Smitty guy, has been absolutely lights out from a transfer from Georgia Southern. Then you get another true freshman, Drew Bean, that actually did really well this past weekend at Shriners. And then, of course, you got Jordan Beck, who's been really, really good this year. I mean, he's found a way to barrel at the ball. He's super athletic. Drew Gilbert's also in that. If you remember the Grand Slam against Wright State in the regional last year, that's how you know Drew Gilbert. And he's got a cannon of an arm. So Tennessee, personally, I like to see him take it easy with Leigh Tidwell, save the arm a little bit, because that might be our saving grace in this class, depending on the situation Landon Sims. If Landon Sims is fine and can come back to pitch, then, you know, this isn't as bad as we think it is. But until we figure something out with Landon Sims, this class is – really, really, really bad in terms of college pitching. Everything else is fine. But college pitching is really, really suffering this year. Because Peyton Paulette, Tommy John surgery. Connor Prelip, Tommy John surgery. Henry Williams, Tommy John surgery. You're seeing a trend here. It's not good.
Not good at all. And we need to trademark a Smitty guy. I love that. We just need to.
Yes. Here's the thing. When Smitty is banging his drum, you listen. Yeah. This rule of thumb, when he's a very smart guy. I love Smitty for a reason. And it's the fact that he hits on every single person that he knows is going to pop. I mean, he was on the Eury Pérez train, like you had mentioned. There was someone else he was on in the draft this past year. I can't remember who it is. But, I mean, he was banging that drum for months beforehand. We go to see him, and he popped. And I was like, oh, hey, let's look at that. Smitty's on his drum again. You know? Like, we're going to talk about this here in a little bit more once we get to the next topic here. But the draft team is just insanely fun to work with because Joe Doyle, Smitty, you know, Will, Brian Recca. We've actually added Jackson Thomas and Brandon Smith to our lineup too. Everyone in the draft chat, insanely helpful, insanely smart. I feel dumb just being in there personally because I'm not as good as they are. Like, who goes to me for all this stuff? And I'm honestly probably the worst out of the whole bunch in that one, to be fair.
Yeah, it's slow to get back to me, too. I was asking him about a something, rotational power. Like, would you call this power rotational on this certain prospect? And it took him like a day to get back to me because he was driving to Smitty's wedding. It was a whole thing. But but no, that's a very smart group. And all those guys double up and do, you know, for the most part, some level of professional stuff too, right? Because we got Smitty down in Florida, able to catch a bunch of that stuff. You have you're out near Durham, right? And be able to catch some games around there. I mean,
it's like 45 minutes from,
yeah. So I have Peoria near me. I have the Chiefs, and hopefully Big Ten plays soon. But as I mentioned, it's cold here, so ISU and U of I, who are close to me, are not currently playing in the state every weekend. I think I have actually, it might be next weekend. We got Purdue on the, I think it was like the 15th, coming in to play Illinois State, I think it is.
And so, they're undefeated.
And they have Purdue a decent arm, I believe.
Purdue is undefeated, and yes, I think you're right. I don't know
Adam
who it
Mazur.
Is. But
Adam Mazur. Is that not him?
That's Iowa.
That's Iowa. So Iowa's not Purdue. We're learning things. this is what I mean, guys. I'm dumb. So let's jump into this next thing. And of course, we have a lot of great college baseball talk that happens during the draft show. In general, that's not what Field and Stream will be about. But there's no other baseball going on right now unless you're just watching the minor league spring training videos, which I have been religiously. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, I'm sure, as it comes up. But check out our draft show, because they do a lot of really good work with that stuff. Of course, the top however many hundred we're at with the 2022 draft, the 2023 draft, all on the site. But I want to talk to you because this is about scouting as much as anything, right? So you go out to a lot of games, and I kind of just want to talk about what is your, I guess, approach when you head out to a game. What are you, is there anything specifically you're looking for?
So personally, what I do when I get to the field is obviously I get there early because I want to get set up. My main routine is I'm going to have a camera somewhere behind home plate. Recently I've been able to get up onto the like closer up so I can get a better view, like ground level essentially. But most of the time I'll have that camera there. I wish I had some on the side for open side so I don't have to run around, but is what it is. And of course I'll just sit back and, you know, just kind of take in the game. I'll watch BP and see, you know, raw power, who's got the best raw power on that team. When it comes to in game, I'm kind of looking for, obviously with pitching, I'm looking at velocity and what the stuff looks like. You know, what's the fastball command like? What's the movement profile on it look like? Like with your eyes, you don't need to always just look at data points to kind of judge like, okay, so that's not a bad fastball or that's not a bad slider. You know, I've mentioned this before on other podcasts with Joe and Smitty and all those guys. To me, scouting is more 75 to 80% your eyes. The rest is data points. It's nice to have that data, but it's not end all be all when it comes to how you finalize your decision or your opinions on some guys. I kind of just keep it in the background and kind of look at it as like, okay, so that's the, like, you look at a guy with like a fat, like a IVB on a fastball, like 20 inches average, and they have like, like we were talking about earlier, some guy had like 54 innings. He's averaging 20 inches on his fastball. That's good. And I would like to
that
see how that
come
looks
up later. That guy's going to come up later.
Yes, it will. So, yeah, that's kind of the stuff I look for. And then, of course, with that with hitters, I will say I do struggle with hitters a little bit. I'm still – it's obviously still a work in progress. I'm trying to work on my craft. I am not afraid to tell anyone I'm not that good. And personally, I don't think I'm as good as everyone thinks I am. I don't know if that's
yes,
just
he is. Don't let him lie to you.
I am not lying to you.
He's lying to you. He's very good. That's why he's here. Continue.
I mean, that's fair. So yeah, it's like I kind of look for, you know, how does, like, what's the bat speed like? What's the operation look like? Does he have kind of like Zach Nato where he's got that huge leg kick and there's a lot of movement and it's noisy compared to like, okay, this guy's got pretty smooth operation, same for pitching, like how are mechanics. And of course with the video that I take, I look back into the video and kind of like double check to see, okay, how do I look, how does this look and how do my opinions change from when in game to what it is now that I'm like a couple days after and I'm looking at the footage at home. You know, that's just kind of what I do at the field. And obviously, you know, try and put my name out there. I try and talk to some scouts, a couple other guys. Like I've talked to Aaron Fitt from D1 Baseball a couple weeks ago when I was at Vanderbilt. I know the guys at Baseball America pretty well. And that's all because of what Joe and all those guys have been able to do for me. That's really all I can say is that they've helped me a lot in terms of having that confidence. Because I'm an anxious person. I'm going to put that out there right now. I'm not very social in person. Like you see me at the field, I'm laser focused. It's just how I am. But they've done a lot in terms of helping me get more connected and getting more confidence to talk to these people out there, despite the fact that I feel like I'm not as good as everyone thinks I am. So yeah, that's mainly how I go to the field, and that's what I do. And like I said, I want to work on my craft and get better at it, so that way, you know, I could be like Joe Drake, and I'm a scouting consultant for the Orioles. You know.
Well, here's what I'll say. There's not room on this podcast for two self-deprecating hosts, so you're going to have to work on it.
Dang it.
I know, I'm the incumbent. And also, I would like you to explain how being hyper-focused on a game when you're scouting is a bad thing. I feel like you want to be focused in watching the game. Oh, man. That's a joke. Yeah, obviously, yeah. I know what you mean, right? It's good to be able to get connections while you're there and everything, but absolutely, watching the game, I feel you. Whenever I've gone to games, I've had to run around. There was... and this was a high school game, high school playoffs around here. And there were three guys who were relevant to the state of Illinois in terms of being able to, you know, move on to the next level, go to college. I think one of them had a commitment to Oklahoma, I believe. So, you know, super excited about that. But they were all batting back to back to back in an inning, and they go left, right, left. So me not having a steady camera with my phone running back and forth every time they go up at the plate to try to get some open face looks at the swing. So I'm with you. I'm 100% with you on that. But yeah, being out at the game, it's good. So when you're talking hitting, one thing that I want to ask about, because, you know, personally, when I'm watching and I see a quiet setup, for some reason, I like it better. It looks better, but it doesn't necessarily mean if somebody has a loud setup, it's bad, right?
Yeah, no, like I mentioned with the example of like Zach Nato, extremely loud setup. I mean, his knee comes up to his chest as he's loading into his swing, and he's also moving back a little bit, then he explodes out, which, you know, some scouts would probably say it's like, we'd like to see that toned down a little bit, which, to be fair, it does affect the swing at some point. Because if you have that big leg kick, you're going to start missing some stuff off the plate. You're starting to chase a little bit. It does hamper your swing. It depends on the person, really, is the way I look at it. And that's probably – it might be a dumb answer for all I know. But, yeah, I mean, I like to see that quiet setup. The hands aren't moving that much. There's not really much of a hitch to that, you know, load into the back, into your swing, and then explode forward. One thing I do kind of look for – when it comes to, you know, showing off power, how much separation do you generate between the hips and the shoulders? If you want someone that can really separate their hips and shoulders, Khalil Watson. I've mentioned it before. I tweeted it before. He was probably the best example I've seen of someone that can separate their hips and shoulders and generate a lot of raw power. Just like, it is one of the most beautiful swings you've probably ever seen in your life. You know?
And it's interesting that you go with him out of that draft class for hip shoulder separations. I don't mean to cut you off, but it's interesting out of that draft class you choose him for separation.
Yeah, I mean
when Brady House is alive.
Yes. It helps when
You're talking about who you've seen live, right? I'm sure you've seen House live at some point, but you saw a lot of Khalil Watson, so that does make sense. But yeah. Still. Like that, what he's talking about is what everybody's talking about with Brady House, right? Or if you want to look major league, Fernando Tatis is that way. So if you just to give a visual of somebody who you might have seen more, because not many people are talking, at least that I've seen, about Khalil Watson and his shoulder hip separation.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, Brady's House too. I've seen it a couple of times. Saw him at area code games when they had it in Georgia, and then I saw him at Ward Woodbat. That is where I saw the separation, and holy crap. When we saw it on video, we slowed it down, and like me and Smitty looked at it and kind of like gave our own reactions. We were like, and I excuse the explicit language here, but we were like, holy fuck. he is a grown man at like 18, and his hips are wide the hell open, and his shoulders are just, it's not even starting to swing yet, and his hips are like out here. It's insane separation. He generates so much power out of it. It's insane. And I think you just sent me a photo. So
love finding guys like this, because it's just is random. But that photo I just sent you, that's pretty good separation right there, right?
Yes, it is. That is pretty good separation.
Do you have any idea who that might be? Anthony Volpe.
I saw the Yankees on there. Yeah. I was going to guess it was either him or like Pereira or something.
Yeah, no, that's Anthony Volpe because you know, Prospects Live kind of jumped on Anthony Volpe earlier than everybody, and I think that was a Jeff Ponce thing, I have to imagine.
Yes, I do believe it was.
So then you're looking at why, because I never read his report that he wrote about Volpe or anything yet, because I've been focused on getting my own reports done. Somebody was talking to me about Volpe, like, why are you guys so high on him? And I just watched his swing. I'm like, this is why. He's already hitting the ball really well, and look what he can do. This is like this is good.
And now he's like, he comes as his top 10 prospect in baseball, or top 15, top 20.
Right. And there's one other guy, and I constantly forget his name, but there's one other guy who comes to mind when I think about this kind of separation, not to cut you off about what, you know, who you're talking about or anything, Tyler, but he's in the Reds system, and he's kind of gotten some talk lately. It's Yerlin Confidant. It's like kind of a Brady House type hit tool, not really there right now, but he separates really well also, which is a really cool thing. And I think you and I had a very long conversation about this because I was very wrong in my assumptions of how I thought the body would play with a guy who has good separation like that. It helps a lot when you're trying to turn on inside pitches.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the main thing. Cause like, We'll bring up Justice Thompson, for example, where, you know, his swing was long. He had struggled to get inside of pitches. And that was the concern about with most scouts was, like, see if we can shorten up the swing because he never tapped into his power in game. He's got loads of raw power, never tapped into it in game, mainly because he couldn't turn on an inside fastball. If he could, it's 420 plus. Like, it's a pretty insane power that he's got. It's just the fact that you have to make sure you can turn on inside pitches. And I've seen this talked about on Twitter before. I prefer a guy who'd be able to turn on those inside pitches instead of trying to go opposite field every single time to show off that they can use an off-field approach. You're going to be pitched inside a lot, especially with the fastball. You can turn on that. You can show yourself as a true hitter. And that's the way I look at it. So, you know, that's
interesting, right? Because I am banging the drum on Davison De Los Santos, and his, you know, people are starting to learn his name, which is awesome. I did something, but and it wasn't even me. But for me, when I saw him, some way
of putting it out there, so I mean,
yeah. So for me though, when I'm watching him, and again, this is all on stream, right? But I'm watching a 17-year-old at the time. In the first game I saw, now he had other games where he hit home runs that showed off his massive power. But when I saw him, the first at bat I saw him, and maybe I'm getting the order wrong, but he pulled a double down the line. I'm like, that's great. You know, he's able to turn on that. That's awesome. Next at bat, he went opposite field with conviction. And I'm like, that's out of a 17-year-old. That's really good. So I'm actually a little higher on the hit tool because he showed that he could do both. Now, I'm not necessarily saying I'm looking only for slap hitters, but the same thing with Hedbert Perez, where now he's showing he can go to the opposite field against, you know, older competition at 18 years old. I see that as important when I'm watching games.
Yeah, no, and it's like, I'm not saying an all-fields approach is bad when I say it's like, I prefer a guy can turn down inside pitches. I just feel like you're not a complete hitter if you're not able to turn those inside pitches, and you're trying to go, you know, mainly like up the middle or opposite field, you can pull a ball. There's nothing wrong with that. That's how you're going to get most of your power is you turn on the inside pitch and all of a sudden your ball is now 420 feet away in the stands and some kid is running after it and probably falling on his head. So, I mean,
wow, you know, that's got dark fast.
I didn't mean for it to get dark that quickly. I apologize.
But especially with the band shift, right? Just Joey Gallo would never go opposite field. Just pull the ball all the time, no matter what.
Yeah. Just pull the ball and hit it where they're at, aka hit it in the stands.
There you go. You know? There you go. So another aspect I want to talk about, because we're running out of time here, Tyler. Another aspect about being in the field I want to talk about is taking your own video and posting your own video. I know this has been in the Twitter conversation because of our friend Will, who went viral with his video of an Drew Jones home run, I believe it was. And that kind of launched into the conversation of give credit, right? So you have a lot of great video, and I know you're very passionate about this, Tyler.
Yes. I will say I will go to bat for anyone on this website. or just anyone in general, really. And I'm gonna credit Jerry Karabas on this one because he nailed it on the head here. If it's say like because they have the /video/1 thing where it gives like that what they did with Will for John Boy Media, which is the main center point of this conversation. You know, if it's a team account or something like that, okay, that's fine. I don't have an issue with that because they're already being paid for that content. If it's like one of us, like me, you, Will, Smitty, anyone in this industry that's going out and spending their own money and putting a lot of time and effort for, it's nice to get that credit. Personally, I don't like what Twitter has done with their little credit thing because it really just doesn't look like you're giving them credit. With the video that Will had, there's a bunch of people that were just like, it felt like they were stealing that video and using it for their own like purpose, really. I'm just going to talk about this video now. We're looking at 3.2 million views. They had like 1.5 million by the time he went to bed the night that he filmed this. And we're recording this now on March 7th. So it's this Monday. So it's been like 5 days since this went out. But personally, I really enjoy it when, we'll bring up the SportsCenter tweet where they included his text and they tagged him in the tweet itself. I prefer that personally because it helps get that person more credibility. It gets their name out there. Like Will right now, he jumped up from like 400 followers. He's close to 1,000 right now. He should be over 1,000 personally, in my opinion. He does a very good job of what he does and he grinds his ass off. And that goes for really everyone else on this site. Like for me, I've mentioned before, I work at the grocery store. I do this on the side. I basically have two jobs at this point. Joe Doyle has a separate job from this. Smitty runs a restaurant outside of this.
I'm a social emotional counselor at an elementary school.
Exactly. So it's like, and we can even bring up more examples. Like Joe Drake, he has another job outside the scouting consultant thing. Jeff also had another job outside of doing what he did here, and now he works at Baseball America. So it's like we're putting a lot of effort into this, and it doesn't feel like we're getting that credit that we rightfully deserve for, you know, if they're going to try and like do what they did with Will's video where they had that little thing at the bottom that's like from Will or like from Tyler or from Joe. And it's like, no one's going to see that. Like, granted, yes, you can go out there and say, it's like, oh, that's them giving credit. No, that's Twitter's attempt to just say, it's like, oh, this is where the video is from. But no one really clicks on that. Like, personally, you put the credit in there in the tweet itself. You're acknowledging that the video is not yours. And you're also giving credit to the person that took the video and spent the time, the money, and the effort to go out there and get that. It's more than just we go out there and we have a camera in hand and we snap this video and it's like, oh, this is going to do numbers on Twitter. Because that's what Will did, actually. He came in and was like, oh, this video is going to do numbers. And then instantly it popped. It's a lot more than that. I mean, as part of our job here is to take video, write down notes, you know, do all this stuff that comes with scouting. But, you know, it's common courtesy, really. Like you have the video, you tweet it out, tag the person. It's not hard. It takes 3 seconds to just hit the @, type in the name, it pops up. Like, I don't think that's much of an ask for us, really. Like, you know, we'll have that video go up. I've had mine go up a couple times where it's gone off and, you know, next morning I've got like 100,000 views for a hormone swinger like Ian Moeller and Khalil Watson or something like that. But it's like, it takes 3 seconds to just type in that name and give them that credit. It doesn't take much to do that. And that's why I take it. That's why I mentioned it's like, I will bat for anyone at this site that goes out and does all this stuff. Because that's a lot of time and effort that you're putting into something like this. Like the Vanderbilt trip for me, I flew 1.5 hours from Raleigh to Nashville and then took a bus 1 hour to the hotel. And then from there, it was walking to the ballpark, coming back, looking at the video, going over this and that, doing reports, this and that. And it's like that for all of us. you know, it's, you know, Will did a very good job too of handling the situation because he was very humble about it. I'll admittedly say I'm kind of the same way, but there's also times where it's like, okay, I'm not getting credit. I kind of don't like that. So I don't know. That's just how I am. Everyone else is different about it, but that's just how I put it out there. It's like, I would like to have people just put credit in the tweet itself instead of letting Twitter's little feature do it itself. And it's not going to do as much as you think it's going to do. So that's my two cents on it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and Will is very underfollowed. You're underfollowed. Follow at TylerJennings24. I'm overfollowed. So, I mean, don't unfollow me because I like it, but.
Don't you dare say that. You deserve all the followers you get.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. I just make a ton of jokes and people don't unfollow me for some reason. So with that, T. Jennings soapbox is over. We're just working on segments all over the place here in our first podcast together. But we're going to do our closing thing. It's the same, our closing question, the same as it always is. We're not changing that because I personally love it because I spend so much time watching players that no one probably cares about outside of their family, which is, I mean, I hate to say it that way, but like people aren't paying attention to certain prospects. That's just the way it is. That's where I come in, right? So I like to share a bunch of those guys, which is why I started doing this. So I'm going to jump in with my prospect to watch, and then I'll let you go, Tyler. But my guy is the one you were talking about earlier with his fastball and all that stuff. And that is Steven Cruz from the Brewers. I have been banging this drum, probably not as successfully as Smitty, but I've been banging this drum since I wrote his report for Prospects Live. I messaged Joe immediately at the time, and I was like, this guy's in the top 30. Like, this guy has to be in the top 30. I don't care. Because I'm only seeing highlight videos. He was in the DSL. His stuff looks really good, just from the eye test. And I know that highlight videos. He was old for the DSL, so he's got really good highlights. I mean, no other way to put that. But it looks like he's got a good breaking ball. It looks like he has at least some feel for his changeup, because a feel for changeup, even if it's a highlight video, if you don't have feel for a changeup, it's not going to make the video. And changeup feel is very hard, right? So he at least showed that he might have some feel for it. I'm excited to see him this year. But as you mentioned, his fastball's got really good IVB. It's got plus spin as well to go along with it. That's a really good pitch to start with. Now, it's not that fast. It's low 90s. But he also has a decent curveball that gets a ton of vertical break. I mentioned the changeup. And the Brewers themselves have been really good for pitching prospects. This is a lot of raw stuff from Steven Cruz. I think if they want to be aggressive, I think you can drop what will end up being, I think, a 21-year-old Steven Cruz into lower high A, and he'll be able to jump in there and compete. They might put him on the complex just to see. I don't really know what their plan is. It depends, I guess, on how much they believe in him and all that stuff. But the Brewers' development for pitching has been extremely good. And I think he's got a really good base to start with. Now, he's in the low 90s right now, and that's obviously not exactly where you want to be velocity-wise. It's not the worst thing in the world, but realize that Steven Cruz, at still 20 years old, he'll turn 21 in November. He's listed at 6'2", 165. So he's got room to grow because he looks every bit of that. He's got room to grow, and he's also got pretty good height. Like, this is a good frame for a pitcher. I don't know, man. I'm going to keep banging this drum until he gives up 50 runs over the course of three innings to start the year, and then I might back off a bit. But I think he's going to be pretty good. I'm really excited to see what he does stateside. I'm hoping that he is placed above the complex because I think he's too good for the complex. I know there's the stories that come out about how some guys just get held back in the DSL for money reasons for the organization, and they can start higher than that. I know Jorge Vera is a guy who's probably going to start a lot higher than the complex, which would technically be his next level. So I'm hoping Cruz is one of those guys, and I'm really excited about him. I think he's going to be awesome. And when he is, you're going to back me up. I said this on this podcast, Tyler.
Yes, yes, I am. There's no doubt about it. When he pops, I'm going to clip this from the podcast, post it, and, you know, give all the praise to Hoof on this one. So,
you know, there's some guys that I've hit. I think De Los Santos is the one I'm most proud of that people are excited about now, Davison De Los Santos. Yes. I fell in love immediately. I know that he's probably a first baseman long term. He's already got some body concerns, all that stuff, but Dude can hit. I don't know. Dude can hit. That's all I got for you. But yes. So who is your guy, Tyler, in your first ever, in your first ever prospect to watch as co-host of Field and Stream? This is a big honor for this particular player. Tyler, take it away.
Sounds good. So with the top 100 coming out today, I decided I'm going to go ahead and do someone that's in the back end of the top 100 just because I kind of got out of work late and I was rushing to get on the stream. Brandon Williamson out of Seattle is a guy that whenever he was drafted, really, I was in on him because I thought he was a pretty good arm. I think he was from Texas Christian. I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that's where he's originated from. He was like a fifth or sixth round pick. But I mean, he's done very well for himself in that Mariners organization. And that Mariners farm has been really, really good of late. And kind of just going through some of the stuff that we have here. He pitched 67 in the third innings over at AA last year. He's a 23-year-old. 33% K rate with a pretty decent walk rate, about 8%. But the fastball averages 93 to 94, topped out 96 over last season in AA, with a fastball averaging like 21 inches of IVB with some run to it.
Seems
that's good. Impressive. And not to mention the whiff rate on the fastball is 37.1%. That's like double plus to elite whiff rate on a fastball. Because you think about the average fastball whiff rate, it's around like 20%. 37% is mind-boggling, especially over that kind of sample size. Impressive. Not to mention, he has pretty good feel to spin a curveball and a slider as well. The slider averaged like 2550. Curveball was like 2700. And it's got a bunch of depth and some horizontal movement. It's kind of like a sweepy depth curveball. Doesn't really have much of a whiff rate on it, though. It's not entirely all that good. It's like a mid-70s pitch, kind of like a show-me kind of deal. Doesn't really throw it all that much, if I remember correctly. Only threw 163 last year. Slider was his main out pitch and had like an average whiff rate. But there's quite a bit of depth to it. There's a lot of sweep movement to it as well. And then, of course, with the changeup, it's got average separations, about 8 mile an hour separations, like a mid-80s pitch with decent fading action and tumbling action as well. And it's got a 45% whiff rate, which is pretty good. Because that's a plus pit. That's plus on the whiff rate on our little tool that we have here to look at this stuff. So I don't know. I'm in on this guy. I like him. Like I said, it's been someone I've followed for a little bit here. So I wanted to put his name out there. He's got the honor of the first ever Tyler Jennings prospect to watch on Field and Stream. So
awesome. And he is TCU second rounder.
Okay, I don't know why I thought six rounders. So yeah. I must be thinking of someone else.
And not to one up you, but I think that's a good point. If you want to go in our top 100, the guy that I'm picking to pop, I wrote his report. Dude is nuts. Christian Hernandez from Chicago. Oh my God. there is not a lot of video, but you're talking about an 18-year-old swing off the chain. We'll have to talk about it some other time because right now it is time to wrap things up here. Tyler, I am so excited to have you on as co-host. Thank you so much for saying yes when I asked you.
You're welcome. I'm happy you asked me. I mean, whenever you opened it up, I was going to ask anyways. And as soon as I'm in the middle of work and he texts me, it's like, you're ready for this? I was like, sure. Yeah. Let's do this now. It's big shoes to fill. I'm not going to lie. I said I was going to take 2 months. 2 months. We're going to work on that. So
yes, I did. So when we found out where Joe was going, I sent Tyler a message and I said, hey, you know, I don't want to put any pressure on you. Last guy I worked here works for a team now. He goes, it's all right. I'll step in. I'm up for the challenge. And I go, it's not a challenge. It's an expectation. So he has 2 months to work for a team. That's it. That's what I got for him. But Tyler, I hope it's not 2 months because I'd love to keep this thing going. We'll be back around again next week with another episode. Thank you guys for listening. This is Field and Stream as a part of the Prospects Live podcast network.